This is Audible.
Hear My Heart. Written by Marianne Jordan. Narrated by Cale Williams.
Chapter 1. Music blared over the noise of the crowded room as Aidan McFarlane stood behind the bar serving drinks, talking with the locals, and chatting up the women who were vacationing in the area. Though Baytown was just a little coastal town on the eastern shore, it always managed to pull in those looking for a beach retreat. Co-owner of Finn's Pub, along with his older brother Brogan and younger sister Caitlin, he was used to the crowd. A longtime business in Baytown, originally owned by their grandfather Finn, it had been deeded to them when he decided to retire. Finn's Pub was one of the few restaurants in the little town that stayed open all year, and the locals made it their regular weekend stop because of it. Baytown vacationers looking for a drink, a good meal, and local color filled the tables as well. Winking at the woman in front of him, Aidan watched as his older brother carded a couple of young girls that looked to be in college. He laughed as they pouted and tried to flirt their way to getting a couple of drinks. They stood no chance of that with Brogan. As expected, not a second later, Brogan shot them down with a glare that would make most people cringe.
"Don't mind him, girls. Just make sure to come back in a couple of years when you can try one of my specialties. I'll still be here, and better than ever."
He grinned, his blue eyes flashing as he flexed his arms. They smiled at him and, casting a glare back toward Brogan, moved away from the bar.
"Man, why you gotta flirt like that?" Brogan growled.
"Why you gotta scare away fucking potential customers?" he shot back.
"Why you gotta cuss in front of the customers?"
"'Cause they don't fucking care. Why you gotta get on my case all the time?"
"Both of you shut up and serve the drinks."
They swung their heads around in unison and watched as Caitlin walked behind the bar. Her arched eyebrow and glare had both of them quiet, but grins played about their lips. Brogan bent to kiss her cheek and asked,
"How's my nephew?"
Her scowl fell off her face as her lips curved into a proud smile.
"Wonderful, as always," she replied. "Mom and Dad are babysitting little Finn right now."
Aidan offered a chin lift to Gareth, her husband, as he moved in to wrap his arms around her. Caitlin's long dark hair and lush curves were in contrast to the slender blonde who slid behind the bar and immediately moved to Brogan.
"Who's keeping law and order in Baytown tonight if you're here?"
he quipped, grinning at Brogan's wife Ginny, one of the police officers in town. "All's quiet, and tonight's my night off," she replied, her sharp eyes glancing around the bar, landing on the young women at the other end.
"Before you say anything, Brogan already carded them and read them the riot act," he said.
"Good," she retorted, shooting him a grin before lifting her gaze to Brogan. He stood for a moment and stared at the two couples, both whom he loved more than life, but the usual feeling of glad to still be free did not come. Instead, he recognized that another feeling had been sliding through him lately, one of longing. For what, he had no idea, but it was replacing his carefree attitude more and more. Sucking in a deep breath, he cast his gaze toward the back of the bar, where a gathering of their friends sat, most in couples. Most of the men had been raised together on the bay, earning the nickname the Baytown Boys as children, and it had stayed with them into adulthood. Each had all joined the military after high school and had returned to live in Baytown as adults. Many were now married, and some had children. Looking back to Brogan and Ginny, he smiled. Even they were expecting now. Life was changing for the Baytown boys, and the melancholy thought hit him in the gut.
"Is it passing me by?"
A shout from the side jerked him out of his morose reverie.
"Aidan, you coming tonight?"
Harvey, one of their young line cooks, was throwing a beach bash, and he nodded.
"I'll be there," he called out.
Turning back to the side, he caught four pairs of eyes on him. Lifting his eyebrow, he tossed the rag in his hand to the bar.
"What?
Aren't you getting a little old for those kind of parties?"
Caitlin asked, her blue eyes flashing at him. Brogan threw in his 2 cents.
"No food, just alcohol.
And probably college girls who are looking for a hookup," Ginny finished, her lips pursed into a thin line.
"Sounds like my kind of party," he quipped,
ignoring the niggling voice inside that agreed with them. In truth, he enjoyed the Baytown boys' parties more, filled with good food and good company, but Harvey's gave him a chance to find some casual action. At least, that was what he told himself.
You need to find someone you can settle down with, Caitlin said.
And leave all of this?
He swept his hand down his tall, muscular body, giving off his panty-melting grin.
For just one woman? Not ready for that.
He looked at the clock and said,
I'll head out in an hour. Time for me to get my prowl on.
He laughed as the others rolled their eyes, but though he would not admit it, his smile did not reach his heart. Sitting in the corner of Finn's pub, Amelia Smith watched the antics of the people behind the bar. New in town, she had to admit she was envious of their easy camaraderie, but the one man's cocky bragging had her pinching her lips. Looking down, she tried to focus on the delicious fish tacos in her takeaway bag while she waited for her bill, but the bartender was hard to ignore. He was certainly handsome, but she had little room in her life for any man, least of all a stuck-on-himself, overgrown playboy. Still, unable to stop herself, she watched from under her lashes as he headed out, not a care in the world. Lost in her thoughts, she startled when the server brought her credit card back. Signing the receipt, she made her way out into the evening, hurrying to get home. Even though the sun had just set, the beach party was in full swing by the time Aiden drove up to the small house and parked outside. With the pub short a server, he had been unable to get there earlier. Walking toward the beach, he spied Harvey and waved. Harvey, his arm around two women, gave a chin lift, and he grinned in return. As he glanced around, he recognized the blowout of a party was truly as Brogan had predicted, more alcohol than food. And girls, lots of girls. Most of them he did not recognize from town, so they must be vacationers. And they looked young, spring break young. He sighed. He accepted a beer from a kid standing next to the washtub cooler and wondered if the keeper of the alcohol was old enough to drink. Chastising himself for thinking like a bartender with a business instead of a party-goer looking for a good time, he walked over to the bonfire. Several girls lounged on a blanket spread over the sand, beer bottles propped next to their long, tanned legs. Their bikini tops barely covered their tits, and he averted his eyes. Somehow it seemed like perving instead of appreciating. Sighing again, he smiled as one of them grinned up at him.
Hi, handsome, she purred, and her friends giggled.
Purr? Did she just purr?
He eyed their drinks and said,
You ladies enjoying the party?
More giggling ensued, and the blonde said,
Yes, at least here we can drink. We tried going to that dinky bar in town, but some old guy carded us.
His eyebrows lifted to his hairline as he tried to think what she meant. The only bar downtown was Finn's, and the only old guy was his brother, who was only 1 year older than him. Before he had a chance to respond, she leapt to her feet and clapped her hands.
I love this song,
she screamed, and threw her hands into the air.
Dance with me.
As the other girls crowded around, all dancing in a group, their bodies rubbing up against each other's, she asked,
Don't you just love this song?
Can't say I've ever heard it before, he replied, and more giggling met his ears.
Frustration coursed through his veins, and he begged off dancing. Moving back to the table that was supposed to have food, he spied a few bags of chips and one tub of salsa. Turning to leave, he felt fingers grab his arm and looked to see the blonde had moved to him. She bit her lip and looked down slightly so that as she gazed up at him, her face was poised perfectly. Coy, flirtatious.
Fake. Irritating. You need something?
He asked, recognizing his voice was flat, but unable to manage the practiced charm he used so often to entice women into his bed for a few hours. That was all he was willing to give them. But he found no shortage of willing women who wanted just what he had to offer.
Sure, gorgeous, she grinned. I thought maybe you and I could find a quiet place to get to know each other better.
She leaned in, pressing her breasts against his arm.
The guy throwing the party said you like him hot. I promise that's me. We can even ask my friends to join if you wanna.
Irritation flew through him at the thought that Harvey would have said that. It had been a long time since he had gone with anyone this young. He stared into her wide eyes and saw surety.
And I used to be a sure thing, too.
Unable to summon the politeness necessary, he shook his head as he disentangled himself from her hand.
Sorry, not interested.
She blinked as though unable to process what had just occurred.
You're turning me down? Just not in the mood.
Her fists landed on her hips and she arched her back. You're nothing to get excited about anyway, you know. You're just some old guy. With that, she flounced back to her friends and he heard the burst of giggling again. Sighing for the millionth time since he arrived, he tossed a wave toward Harvey and climbed back into his truck. As he drove home, he wondered when it had happened. The young man on the prowl, who now came home early because the party was filled with people barely out of their teens.
And no longer my scene.
Chapter 2. As one bloodshot eye opened, the glare of the light coming through the window caused a sharp pain in Aiden's skull, and he squeezed his eyes shut. The sun was rising over the horizon, shooting rays of pink, yellow, and pale blue across the sky, but he had no interest in that. Rolling over in bed, he smacked his lips, grimacing at the taste in his mouth. It felt like cotton balls had been stuffed in his cheeks.
Make that whiskey-soaked cotton balls.
He did not often drink as much as he had last night, especially alone, but, well, there were always a few exceptions. As his brain slowly began to awaken, he lay sprawled across the bed, wondering for a few seconds where he was. Without lifting his head, he opened both eyes and determined he was indeed in his bedroom. Navy curtains, boring brick walls with no adornment, slatted wood headboard, matching chest of drawers.
Yep, my room.
Managing to sit up, he gingerly rubbed his forehead in a feeble and ineffective attempt to still the headache. Forcing his mind back to the previous evening, he remembered the beach party and coming home alone. Scrubbing his hand over his face, he rolled out of bed and headed to the bathroom, naked. After using the toilet, he stood at the sink, his hands on the counter, and stared at his reflection. Hair standing on end, as though he had run his hands through it numerous times. A scruff along his normally shaven jaw. He was not old, but right now felt every hour of his 30 years. Holding his own gaze, he sucked in a huge breath before letting it out slowly.
What are you doing, man? What the hell are you doing?
Hearing a knock on the door of his apartment, he walked into his room and pulled on the jeans he found left on the floor.
I'm coming,
he called out, immediately wincing at the pain slicing through his brain. He stumbled to the front door and, with a quick jerk on the knob, threw it open and stared at the face he knew as well as his own.
Come on in, bro.
Taking one look at him, Brogan entered and detoured straight to the kitchen, setting a bag on the counter. Following him, he caught a whiff of comfort breakfast food emanating from the bag.
Hot damn, Brogan. You just got voted my favorite brother.
I'm your only brother, dipshit, Brogan replied, opening the bag and pulling out a huge sausage, egg, and cheese biscuit smothered in sausage gravy. Jenny wouldn't let me eat this artery-clogging breakfast, but she figured you'd need it this morning. Best hangover food there is.
He moved toward his kitchen counter, his mouth watering, and scooped up the food. Before taking a bite of the delectable breakfast, he leaned over and turned on the coffee maker. Brogan's words suddenly penetrated his alcohol-fuzzy mind, and he jerked his gaze to him.
Wait a minute. How the hell does Ginny know I need hangover food this morning?
Brogan chuckled and said,
She knew you went to the beach party with Harvey.
Heat flooded his face, and he ducked his head.
And Ginny figured I'd drink too much?
Nah. But she did figure you'd appreciate some breakfast.
Finally sliding his fork through the gravy-soaked breakfast biscuits, he shoved a huge bite into his mouth. The flavors exploded on his tongue, immediately making the morning seem better. Chewing the tasty morsel, he closed his eyes as he swallowed.
Here, he heard Brogan say,
and opened his eyes to see a coffee cup shoved toward him on the counter.
Thanks, he mumbled, and took a sip, ignoring the sting of the burn. So what happened last night? No one to hook up with?
Brogan's question settled deep in his chest, and he winced.
Honestly, I haven't hooked up since last month when that real estate group came to look over some property here on the shore and ended up spending the evening at the pub.
Seeing his brother's eyebrows lift, he nodded.
It's true.
Losing your touch or growing up?
Damn, man, you know how to cut to the chase first thing in the morning.
It ain't first thing in the morning, Sleeping Beauty. It's after 9 o'clock.
His eyes widened at that tidbit, and he shoved another bite of breakfast into his mouth, using the chewing as an excuse to keep him from answering. Seeing Brogan settling his hip against the counter, he sighed. Emitting a rueful chuckle, he admitted,
"The girls at the party last night were pretty. And young. Way too young."
Finishing his meal, he rinsed off the plate and, with a jerk of his head, moved with his coffee cup into the minuscule living room. Sitting on the sofa, he watched as Brogan refilled his cup and joined him.
"You know how we've got high school girls on our team?"
Referring to the American Legion youth baseball teams that he and his friends coached. Brogan nodded his understanding.
"I swear, the girls at the beach party looked about the same age as them. Way too young for me to even be thinking about. And believe me when I say that I wasn't even interested."
Warming to the subject, he said,
"And it's not just there. Even at the pub, the girls who come in, we always have to check their IDs."
Shaking his head, he claimed,
"Not interested. Not even a little. Used to be. I'd have no problem tapping that if they were legal and amenable to a few hours of company. But now, hell no."
Brogan nodded his understanding.
"Yeah, I came to that conclusion several years ago. Glad that you have, too."
Leaning back against the sofa cushions, he drank more coffee, the caffeine easing through his system.
"Hell, I didn't even know the music they were talking about. A couple of them were only 20, not even old enough to drink, and I realized I was 10 years older than they were."
Sighing heavily again, he added,
"So I came home alone and drank my whiskey all by myself."
They were quiet for a moment, each left to their own thoughts as they finished their coffee. After a final sip, Brogan stood and rinsed out his cup at the sink. Turning, he stood with his hands on the counter, his weight leaning forward as he pierced him with his stare.
"So, what got you drinking last night?"
He looked up quickly, and his mouth tightened into a thin line.
"Nightmares or memories?" Brogan asked.
He remained quiet, but had no doubt his brother knew more than he was saying. Both of them had joined the Marines after high school, Brogan the year before him. Like the rest of the Baytown boys, they had felt the calling of the military and enlisted as fresh-faced young men, ready to see the world and break away from their tiny town on the eastern shore of Virginia. But the world was more than they had imagined, and most of them had come home with nightmares that crept in when they were their most vulnerable.
"Yeah, figured as much,"
Brogan said, his chin dropping as he stared at his boots. Scrubbing a hand over his face, he said,
"Hell, I can't do any more nights like last night. Too old to drink like that for sure."
He needed to take a page out of Brogan's book. His brother had come back from his tour in Afghanistan and almost never touched alcohol, even though they co-owned Finn's pub. Chuckling, Brogan said,
"Good."
Looking at the clock on the microwave, he straightened his muscular, tatted body and said,
"Gotta go. Ginny's home, so I want to hang with my wife."
"How's she doing? Morning sickness and all that?"
"Not a problem at all."
Brogan shook his head.
"She says she's one of the lucky ones, and I'm not supposed to tell Caitlin that."
He chuckled.
"Yeah, Caitlin was a nightmare."
Brogan blew out of breath at that understatement.
"See you at Finn's this afternoon."
With a chin lift, he watched his brother move to the door. His hand on the knob, Brogan turned and looked over his shoulder.
"You know, the Eastern Shore Mental Health Group has helped a lot of us. Just remember it's there if you need it."
He did not give an answer, but knew Brogan did not expect one. Watching him leave, he felt a pang of envy. It was a new emotion, and one that he had trouble understanding. Brogan had returned from his time in the Marines even more taciturn than he had been as a teenager. But falling for the pretty town police officer Ginny had given his brother a new outlook on life. He loved his sister-in-law, and was so happy for both of them, but had never felt the desire to settle down. Even in high school, he never dated just one girl. Known as the jokester of the family, he always said there was too much awesomeness for just one woman, a comment that never failed to elicit an eye roll from his mom and sister, and a laugh from his friends. Walking back into the kitchen, he washed out his cup and looked around at his apartment. Just a block off of Main Street where Finn's was located, it was in an old renovated brick building. The outer walls were exposed brick, and the inside walls were still the original, white painted drywall as when he had first moved in. The space was small but open, with a kitchen in one corner and a small dining area next to it, which he had set up with a card table and four folding chairs for poker nights. The other side of the room was the living room, furnished with a sofa, chair, coffee table, and one end table. Obviously, a large flat-screened TV sat on the opposite wall. After all, there were some things he spent money on. Other than that, he lived simply, saving his money for something. He just had not figured out what yet. Down a short hall were his one bedroom and bathroom, both modest, overlooking the yard of the backdoor neighbors who had a little garden and a few trees. Checking the time, he pushed off the counter and stalked to the bathroom to take a shower. He needed to wash off the rest of the whiskey smell and get ready for coaching the kids at the game. Standing underneath the warm spray of water, he wondered, "What more could I want?" Not having an answer, he nonetheless felt something was missing, and so the question rang and rang through his head. Chapter 3. The sun shone brightly down on the town's ball field, and Aiden pulled his ball cap off to wipe his brow. Sliding it back on his sweat-soaked hair, he appreciated the shade it provided his eyes. Standing in the dugout, which was more like the sidelines behind the fence, he kept his eyes on the game and the young uniformed kids nearby. "Jeffrey, you're up next," he called out, and nodded at the signals sent to him from Jason at third base. Jason Boswell was not one of the original Baytown boys, but had come to live there at the request of Zach Hamilton, the town's fire chief. Jason and Zach had served in the Navy together. The Baytown boys had experienced the comfort of a welcoming place to return after the military tours, but knew many of their friends had not. So they invited any who might need a friendly place to land to move to Baytown and become part of the community and the active American Legion they had founded. His gaze moved lazily around the rest of the ball field, seeing the other coaches, all good friends. Mitch Evans, the police chief, and Grant Wilder, one of the police officers in town, were coaching next to him. Gareth Harrison, Caitlin, and Ginny were standing near the teenage girl players. Hunter Simmons, another transplant from the Navy, was near first base, talking to the young boy on base as they eyed the pitcher. Callan Ward was still in the Coast Guard and was currently in the outfield. Hearing the cheering from the stands, he glanced at all those who had come out. He was glad to see the crowd. A lot of townspeople came to support the kids playing. The AL sponsored the teams of boys and girls of all ages, providing them with uniforms and coaching at no cost to the parents. With North Herron County listed as one of the poorest counties in Virginia, their donations of time and money were appreciated by everyone. Their efforts allowed children, whose parents might not be able to afford such a luxury as youth sports, a chance to participate. He tossed a wave to the group of women sitting together, all wives of his friends. Tori, Jillian, Belle, and Jade were married to Mitch, Grant, Hunter, and Lance, respectively. Their eyes were hidden behind sunglasses, but he knew they had seen him when they waved in return. Looking up at the blue sky with only a few white, fluffy clouds rolling by, he pulled in a deep breath of salty air. He had taken living near the bay for granted growing up, but after the mountains of Afghanistan, Baytown was a welcome reprieve, and the breeze was blissful. As the inning came to an end and the players switched places on the field, he noticed a small girl standing to the side, her eyes intently watching what was happening through the fence. He knew all of the children and youth who played on one of the AL teams, but had not seen her before. The front of her dark brown hair was pulled up with a pink bow, letting the rest fall down by the sides of her face and back. Her pink dress seemed incongruous to the sporting event, where most of the kids who were not playing were running around in shorts and t-shirts. She cocked her head to the side in an interesting mannerism, and he wondered who she belonged to. Before he had a chance to approach her, a woman came running up, kneeling directly in front of the little girl. "Emily, don't wander off. I could not find you." "Want to see?" came the simple reply,
a sweet smile on her face.
Then you ask Mommy, and I'll take you closer to the other kids. But you can't just walk off by yourself.
He stared at the woman. He was sure she was a newcomer to town because he would have remembered her. Her long, mahogany hair, so like her daughter's, hung down her back in a low ponytail, and he grinned at the pink scarf that held it in place. She wore a pink sundress that hugged her perfect figure without being ostentatious, thin straps crisscrossing her back, and the front was modest, but flattering. Scanning her top to bottom, her tanned arms and legs, just enough on display, only served to make the entire package drool-worthy.
"Hi," he greeted, walking closer. "You must be new to town."
The woman stood, her gaze hidden behind sunglasses, but instead of the wide smile he expected in return, she reached down to take her daughter's hand and faced him stiffly. He noticed the little girl was still staring out onto the field at the other children. The woman hesitated before replying,
"Yes, we are."
"Well, let me welcome you," he drawled, throwing out his best white-toothed grin. "My name's Aiden McFarlane. I'm one of the businessmen here in town."
The woman continued to face him, but her expression was unreadable. The little girl's gaze drifted up to his face, and she smiled a snaggle-toothed grin before ducking her head shyly and stepping partially behind her mother's body, looking out to the field once again. He looked at her a beat longer, then focused on the woman again and said,
Your daughter seems to be interested in the game. Is this her first time to one of our events?"
"Yes."
Her one-word answer might have put him off had she not dropped her gaze down to her daughter, her face immediately softening. Deciding to push, he said,
"We would love to have her play."
The woman shook her head slightly and replied,
"No, thank you. We're just watching."
"Sure, but she's more than welcome to come to our practices. We have all age groups and there are no costs to parents. That allows kids from all backgrounds to be able to participate."
"Thank you, but no."
The woman's already stiff demeanor turned frosty, and she glanced down to her daughter, whose rapt attention was still on the ball field. A slow anger began to burn in his chest at her attitude and snippy replies. Her daughter was clearly interested, which meant the woman had something against the game, and for some reason that really bothered him.
"You know, just because you have a hang-up about the games doesn't mean your kid doesn't want to play."
As soon as the words were out of his mouth, he wondered why he bothered. Her reasons for not wanting her child to play were none of his concern. Whipping her head back to him, she said quietly,
"It's not that. She's not like those kids. Her needs are different."
Rearing back, he stared in stunned silence for a few seconds, not remembering the last time he had met someone so blatantly superior. Gaining his voice back, he leaned forward, his words aimed at the mother and not the child.
"Whoa, judgmental much? I'll tell you, these kids are great, and if you're too stuck up to appreciate that, then I'm glad you won't be involved."
Filled with rage, he turned to walk away, but unable to stop his mouth, he twisted his head and tossed out,
"Too bad your little girl has to deal with parents that think they're better than everyone else."
Her face paled, and she opened her mouth to speak, but suddenly snapped it closed. Squeezing her daughter's hand, gaining her attention, she said,
"Come on, Emily, it's time to go."
Together, they walked away, the little girl looking over her shoulder at the game the whole time. Readjusting his ball cap, he moved back to the fence to cheer from the side. Agitated more than he probably should be at the encounter, he glanced over his shoulder and watched as the two of them walked away, heading toward the parking lot. He was surprised at the woman's unfriendly countenance and felt sorry for the little girl who so obviously wanted to be a part of the other children. The mom may have been drop-dead gorgeous, but her high-maintenance, holier-than-thou attitude held no appeal to him whatsoever. Turning back, Jason nodded toward the receding pair as he came over.
"Mom's pretty. You get her number?"
Irritated at the assumption, he replied,
"No, didn't even try. Thought maybe the little girl would like to play, but uppity mom just stuck her nose in the air and walked off."
"Seriously?"
Jason asked.
"She looked familiar. I guess I've just seen her around."
Once the game was over, the kids all sent home, and the equipment put away, he and the others went over to the pub. An afternoon of good friends and good food was all he needed to forget about the ladies in pink.
"Mama, who was that man?"
Finished folding the blanket in her hands,
Leah put it in the laundry basket and looked down at Emily, sitting on the couch, and smiled.
What man?
The one with the kids, the one who talked to you.
Oh, he was just a coach.
I liked the game they were playing.
Her heart panged at the longing in Emily's voice.
I know. It's called baseball. We can watch some on TV if you like.
Emily scrunched her nose and shook her head.
It's not the same.
I know, baby.
Her heart ached as she watched the myriad of emotions cross her daughter's face. The same feelings were swirling inside of her, too, but she had to be the grown-up. Emily sat quietly for a moment before looking back up at her.
Maybe I can play sometime.
Smiling softly, she reached her hand down and cupped her cheek.
We'll see. I'll try to find what Baytown might have. That would be a better game for you to play.
I liked the other kids.
I promise, once you meet more kids in your class, you'll have new friends.
Emily nodded, resigned, and her heart ached.
You go play, and I'll fix dinner.
Grinning widely, Emily bounced up and ran down the hall, leaving her staring at her back. As she turned to the kitchen of their little house, she thought back to the coach, Aiden. More like asshole, she thought. Slamming the pan she had gotten out to make dinner down on the counter, she winced. Slowly, she sucked in a deep breath and let it out.
After all, it's not the pan I'm pissed at.
She continued to fix their meal, but her mind could not help but wander to the infuriatingly handsome coach. Tall enough for her to have to lean back to look into his blue eyes, a t-shirt that barely contained his broad shoulders and arm muscles, hair that was too long but looked soft enough to... Giving her head a shake, she forced those thoughts from her mind. Handsome or not, his personality was not winning any awards.
I've been down that road before, and it's one journey I don't plan on taking again.
The next day's crowd at the pub was thinner, so Aiden was able to work in the back stocking the bar for several hours. When he came out, he cast his gaze over the tables to make sure the servers were attending to the customers. At the end of the bar stood a lone woman, her back to him, and a takeout bag sitting on the counter next to her. Not waiting on the server, he walked over.
"Can I help you?"
he asked. His breath caught in his throat as she turned and lifted her gaze up to his. It was the woman from the ballpark. Only today he could see her eyes. Dark, warm chocolate stared back at him from a face that was startling in its almost perfection. Porcelain complexion, full rosy lips, thick lashes. His eyes were drawn to the slight scar that ran through her left eyebrow, but it somehow made her face even more interesting. As he stared unabashedly, his mouth not connecting to his brain, he noted her gaze jumped to just behind him, and he turned in time to see Cheryl, the server, come over.
"I'm sorry," Cheryl exclaimed. "I was delayed in the kitchen. Here's your card and receipt."
As the woman took the receipt and quickly signed it, he noted she was not wearing a wedding ring. Remembering he had made a comment about her daughter's parents, guilt speared through him. That had been an asshole remark, in spite of his anger.
Still, she probably busted her ex-husband's balls as well.
Standing, she started to move past him, but his feet remained rooted to the floor.
"Excuse me," she offered, turning sideways to slide by, her eyes not meeting his.
"Sorry," he said, unable to think of anything witty to say.
Finally, he tossed out,
"Listen, I'm sorry about—"
"Save it," she said through tight lips.
Stopping with her hand on the door, ready to push it open, she twisted her head and held his gaze, unsmiling.
"I come for the food, nothing else.
Certainly not the antics of an overgrown Peter Pan." His hands landed on his hips, his apology fading to a glare.
"What the—"
"Oh, you know, all that."
She waved her hand up and down in front of him.
"For just one woman?"
Her eyebrows lifted as she pushed open the door and walked out into the sunshine. He stood stark still for a moment, her words, or rather his words, slamming into him. He wanted to be pissed at her uppity attitude, but he knew he had made an ass of himself at the bar the other night, and she had obviously overheard him. Turning, he shoved the bar stool, pushing it out of the way roughly, as he headed toward the back. Seeing the receipt still on the table, he scooped it up. Amelia Smith.
"Okay, Miss Amelia, we'll just avoid each other from now on."
Chapter 4
What's up?
Aiden walked into the office of Finn's, seeing Caitlin and Brogan already sitting in the cramped room. He glanced around, appreciating how Caitlin was able to keep the office from becoming overrun with piles of papers, receipts, orders, taxes, employee forms, and everything else they needed to run the business. She no longer worked on the floor, having become a partner in her husband's business, Harrison Investigations, but there was no denying she kept Finn's running behind the scenes. When Gareth, a private investigator, first came to town and opened his business, he needed a receptionist who could understand the operations. Caitlin had jumped at the chance and had become so fascinated with investigating, and Gareth, she had studied for and received her PI license shortly after beginning work there. Now her work for the pub was mostly taking care of the paperwork, for which he and Brogan were grateful.
It's that time again, she quipped, waving some papers in front of her. What time?
Taxes, Brogan cut in. Jesus, Aiden, don't you keep up with any of this shit?
Glaring at his brother, he said, Of course I do. But didn't we just do these?
Yes, but we pay quarterly, and it's time again, Caitlin said, her blue eyes scanning the papers on the desk in front of her. And it looks like there's a necessary change as well as a slight problem last time.
His eyes widened as he glanced between her and Brogan, whose normally taciturn expression now included a tick in his jaw.
What?
He asked, his heart sinking at the thought of an accounting error that might sink the business.
First of all, Thomas Redding is retiring, she announced, referring to the accountant in town who handled most businesses.
Blinking, he jerked in his seat, ignoring the creak of the old wood.
Retiring?
The one-word question came out as more of a squeak, as he tried to remember a time when Mr. Redding's accounting business was not taking up a small office off Main Street. Even as a kid, he ran past the office on his way to visiting his grandfather at Finn's. Caitlin chuckled and shook her head in mirth.
He's 80 years old. He's been in business for 55 years.
Rearing back, his chair now groaned as though ready to break, and Brogan shot him a look.
Jesus, Aiden, sit still. The furniture's gonna fucking fall apart if you keep moving like that.
Ignoring him, he continued to shake his head.
I had no idea he was that old. We should give him a retirement party here at Finn's.
Already on it, Caitlin agreed, but what we need to focus on is our taxes right now. Remembering she mentioned a problem, he turned his attention back to the task at hand.
What's up?
Well, the good news is that he has sold his business to a new accountant. I've met with her just this morning, and I like her. She's quiet, serious, very professional. She's also the one who let me know there was a problem last time. Sighing, she continued. It appears Thomas made a slight error, and we underpaid by about $5,000, which is not horrible, but that means we need to make it up this time so we don't get hit with penalties.
Fucking hell, he said,
blowing out his breath while leaning forward, his forearms planted on his knees.
Any good news? Brogan asked.
Well, Leah, the new accountant, said that she's going over our past accounts and might have found a way that we were also overcharged in a few areas, so that might counterbalance the deficit.
Good,
both he and Brogan replied at the same time. She needed more of these forms and receipts, Caitlin explained, picking them up and placing them into the open file on the desk. Gathering up the folder, she held it out to him.
What am I supposed to do with that?
He asked, brows snapping down together.
Take it to the accountant, of course.
Why me?
Because it's your turn to deal with the taxes. We agreed that it was a burden we would share equally.
Isn't it Brogan's turn?
He continued to argue. No, Brogan did it the time before last. I dealt with Thomas last time, therefore you win the prize this time.
But you've already talked to this new lady. You know what the hell y'all talked about.
Caitlin's face softened, and she said, Aiden, you'll be fine. You don't have to do anything but deliver the file and answer some general questions about the business. If she has questions beyond that, she can call me.
Fine,
he bit out, his jaw tight and hands clasped in front of him. Standing quickly, he asked,
Anything else?
Brogan answered, No, man, we're good. He snatched the file from Caitlin's hand and mumbled,
Sorry,
as he headed out, missing the shared look that passed between his siblings. Standing outside Thomas's office, the title Redding CPA LLC painted on the window in gold letters, Aiden paced. He stared at the words, realizing that the new accountant had not added her name yet. Trying to remember if Caitlin mentioned her last name, all he could come up with was her first name, Leah. He glanced down at the folder in his hands, noting the edge was becoming moist from his sweaty palms. Quickly wiping first one hand, then the next, on the thighs of his jeans, he sucked in a fortifying breath. Blowing it out slowly, he pushed open the door and stepped inside. The outer office was the same as the last time he had been there. Dark hardwood floors, buffed to a shine, a heavy wooden desk sat in the corner, elderly Mrs. Markham sitting behind an open laptop, the only modern accoutrement in the room. She looked up and smiled widely.
"Mr. McFarlane,"
she greeted, peering at him over the top of her glasses. He smiled in return. She had called him Aiden until Finn had deeded the pub to him and his siblings. Once he became a business owner, she referred to him as Mr. McFarlane. It always made him feel like she was talking to his father or grandfather, but he recognized that was her way of maintaining professionalism.
"I understand I'm here to meet with the new accountant," he said,
hoping his voice did not show his anxiety.
"Absolutely. In fact, she's ready for you now. I'll show you to her office."
He inwardly chuckled, since he knew there were only four rooms in the back, and with one a conference room, one a bathroom, and one a staff room, that only left one as an office. Following dutifully, he entered the same room as he had when meeting with Thomas.
"Mrs. Smith, Mr. McFarlane is here."
Mrs. Markham stepped out of the way and closed the door behind him, leaving him staring at Amelia Smith. His eyes popped open as her brows lifted in unison.
"You? You're the new accountant?"
She looked up, her mouth in a tight line and her mahogany hair pulled back in a bun, and focused her brown eyes on him.
"Yes, I'm Leah Smith."
Her eyes narrowed slightly, and she added,
"I thought I was meeting with Caitlin McFarlane."
"Well, looks like you've got me,"
he snapped, sliding into the seat in front of her desk.
"Fine."
She smoothed her hair back, but he saw no discernible strands out of place to warrant the action. She reached her hand out for the file in his hand, and if she noticed the sweat-damp edges, she did not say anything, for which he was grateful. As she scanned the contents, he took the time to carefully peruse their new accountant. She wore a white blouse with a lace collar, a single strand of pearls around her neck. Paired with a navy pencil skirt, she had a timeless, classic appearance. Classic, but cold. She gave off no warmth, and he wondered, given how kindly she had looked at her daughter, if she could really be as cold as she seemed. Moving up, her skin was just as beautiful as he observed earlier. He mentally shook his head in derision.
What did I think was going to happen in the last couple of hours? That she would have sprouted witch's warts? And why do I even care?
Rolling his eyes at his wayward thoughts, he startled when she began to speak.
As I told Caitlin, I'm a forensic accountant, not a tax specialist, and expect to hire another accountant soon to help with the tax work. But I'm certainly able to check over what Mr. Redding had worked on and give you my opinion.
He made no comment, so she continued.
It appears that Mr. Redding made a slight arithmetic error last time, causing your business to underpay your quarterly taxes by about $5,000. That could easily be made up this time, but when delving a bit deeper, I also found an area that I think we can make that amount up and even save you a bit more.
Good.
He nodded, glad that she could be professional in spite of their obvious dislike for each other. She swung a stack of papers around on the desk toward him, and, with a yellow highlighter, began marking several of the lines of numbers.
If you'll look here, you will see what I'm talking about. These figures do not add up to what he has down here, and with the missing tax-exempt additions, you can see where I've included those in our bottom-line figures.
Uh-huh,
he said, forcing his voice to have more conviction than he felt. She lifted her gaze to him and said,
Please, just look at the numbers and you'll be able to verify what I'm saying.
I trust you,
he bit out. Her eyes narrowed on his, but he ignored her.
Yes, but I'd like for you to verify the...
Standing suddenly, he said,
I've got to get back to work.
Walking to the door, he hesitated and looked over his shoulder.
Thank you for what you're doing. Really, we appreciate it. Just let us know what we need to pay and we'll sign the forms.
With that, he walked out of the office, tossing a wave toward Mrs. Markham, and then out into the sunshine. Sucking in a deep breath and letting it out slowly, he felt the tension ease off him. Walking back into the pub, he offered a chin lift to Brogan behind the bar and headed back to the stockroom. He was halfway through the reordering when Caitlin walked in behind him.
Everything okay with the accountant?
Yep.
Anything we need to know about?
Nope.
Huffing, she walked around so that she was staring into his face instead of at his back.
Aiden.
Stopping, he put his hands on his hips and glared down at her.
Come on, Caitlin. Miss Smith is obviously good at what she does, but she likes to make sure everyone is on the same page. Sending me in there to talk to her about the finances was kind of a shit move.
Sucking in her lips, her face fell.
Oh, Aiden, I'm sorry. I thought you would just deliver the files and answer any specific questions she might have. I didn't expect her to start showing you what she was working on.
He heaved a sigh, dragging his hand through his hair.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry, sis. I shouldn't have bitten your head off.
Did it get uncomfortable?
Nodding, he admitted.
She wanted me to take a look at some of the numbers with her, but I just said we trusted her.
She reached out and clasped his arm, moving closer.
It's okay, you know.
Lifting his eyebrow, he said,
Oh, really? When's the last time you got numbers switched backward?
Aiden, there's nothing to be ashamed of with how you switch numbers in your head. You understand math concepts perfectly. It's just that visually you read them backward.
Snorting, he said,
Yes, and it drove my math teachers crazy.
Arching a perfect eyebrow, she retorted, No, I think that was you being such a jokester in class. Chuckling, he nodded,
Yeah, you're probably right.
He lifted his shoulders in a shrug and threw his arm around her.
It's okay, really. I just felt like a bug under a microscope when I was in her office. Miss Smith reminds me of a really uptight teacher.
Caitlin hesitated for a moment, and he tilted his head, saying,
Cat got your tongue? That's unusual.
She punched his shoulder and laughed.
I wondered what you'd think about Leah.
Recognizing the mischievous glint in her eye, he questioned,
Leah? Seriously? Listen, if you got some cockamamie idea about hooking me up with her, you can get that out of your head right now.
I just thought that,
Sis, you're smart, driven, and right now so crazy in love with Gareth and little Finn that you want the whole world to fart rainbows. But don't worry about me. I'm good. And believe me when I say there is not one little spark where Miss Smith is concerned.
The two of them walked out of the storeroom, and, ignoring Caitlin's fallen face, he thrust the stock form into her hand.
Want to check this over?
She elbowed him in the ribs and said,
Nope. There's one thing I never worry about, and that is you ordering the wrong alcohol.
As they entered the pub, he walked behind the bar, his mood lighter, as long as he kept his mind off the pretty accountant. What he had told Caitlin was almost true. He had no intention of getting anywhere near Miss Smith because, even as gorgeous as she was, as a person she was uptight and judgmental. But at the same time, unfortunately, remembering the way she looked as she stared at him, there was definitely a spark.
Chapter 5.
Still reeling from her slam-bam meeting with the infuriating Aiden, Leah looked up as Mrs. Markham knocked on the doorframe.
I hate to bother you, but the mayor is here to speak with you.
Stepping further into the room, Mrs. Markham whispered,
I'll warn you, he's a bit pompous and rather pushy, but he's been mayor for a number of years here in Baytown.
Leaning down closer, she added,
He usually summons people to see him in his fancy office in the municipal building. For him to come here alone is out of character, to say the least.
Nodding as she digested her secretary's words, she stood and, smoothing her skirt, said,
Please, show him in.
Rounding the corner, Corwin Banks entered her office, his smile wide and his hand out. Clasping hers, he vigorously pumped her arm up and down. He wore an expensive, tailored suit, and his hair was meticulously styled. The image of a big fish in a little pond came to her mind.
Amelia, I'm Corwin Banks, mayor of this fine town. Been meaning to get over here to see who was taking Thomas's place.
Managing to retrieve her hand without it being crushed, she waved him to a seat and settled back down. It's nice to meet you, Mayor Banks. What can I do for you?
He shifted his girth into the sturdy chair and held her gaze.
To the point, I like that. Well, normally I like to have people come to my office when the business is official, but, I have a delicate situation, one that I'd like handled with discretion.
Intrigued, she leaned forward, her pen and legal pad ready for notes. His gaze dropped to the writing utensils on her desk, and he hesitated for a moment. Finally, he said,
I need to have a forensic accountant take a look at our books. The last audit found a, discrepancy.
Her interest piqued, she said. I would need to be hired by the town council.
Is there any way we can circumvent that process?
Mayor Banks, surely you know the legal process must be followed for any possible theft to be handed over to the county attorney.
Yes, yes, I'm fully aware of the legalities, but you must understand my position.
Laying down her pen, she stared at the blustery man in front of her. His ruddy cheeks grew redder, and she noted a sheen of perspiration over his forehead. His eyes darted around before finally landing back on her.
Mayor Banks, I know that having a forensic accountant come in makes everyone nervous. After all, it would be my job to investigate and discover where the financial discrepancy has occurred and the person who caused the discrepancy, essentially pointing the finger at the person who stole money from the town.
She watched his shoulders slump and his body deflate, but waited to see what he would say.
Yes, he finally agreed,
his face pinched.
It's just that, well, you see, it's an election year, and oh gosh darn, I had hoped this would not become public.
Then you have a choice, Mayor Banks. Disregard the audit and continue forward, possibly allowing a member of your staff to continue to steal from Baytown and face the press when it inevitably becomes public. She paused for emphasis. Or hire me to investigate. It's purely your choice, but if you decide on me, I can give you my word that I am professionally discreet, but will not shirk from asking questions and doing the proper digging.
Corwin nodded and stood, offering his hand.
I appreciate your time. I'll let you know what the town council decides.
She watched him leave and slumped back into her chair. Glancing at the clock on the wall, she was stunned it was only a few minutes after 3 o'clock. She was ready to go home already. Checking her calendar, she remembered she had an introductory auxiliary meeting that evening and was leaving Emily with a sitter. Tempted to skip it, she grimaced, knowing she needed to do more to get out into the community. Sighing heavily, she opened the Finn's Pub file on her desk and continued to work, trying to ignore the irritating thoughts of Aiden McFarlane that kept creeping into her mind. The way his long, dark hair was swept back from his face, as though his hands had continually brushed it back. His blue eyes, the intensity that pierced directly into her. He was tall and muscular, and a complete jerk. Dropping her head to the desk, she groaned. As much as she wanted to deny it, even considering his horrible attitude, there was something about him that sparked an interest, and it had been a long time since anyone had done that.
Rapping the gavel upon the podium, Jillian called the Baytown American Legion Auxiliaries meeting to order. Leah looked around at the gathering, her attention brought back to the front as Jillian spoke.
Rise for the advancement of the colors, Jillian announced.
The large group of women in the building rose to their feet as Ginny Spencer, the sergeant-at-arms, marched forward carrying the American flag. A Methodist minister from the town said the prayer before Jillian led the group in the allegiance to the flag. After Ginny had taken her seat again, Jillian read the preamble to the Constitution of the American Legion and then called Nancy Evans to the podium for the reading of the last meeting's minutes. She was still trying to remember who everyone was and how they were related to each other. She had met the police chief, Mitch Evans, and knew that Nancy was his mother and Tori was his wife. She was fairly sure Nancy was also Jillian's aunt, but was uncertain the exact relationship. After Nancy completed her task, Jillian called Corinne McFarlane, Caitlin's mom, to read the treasurer's report. She leaned slightly to the side to get a better look at Corinne. She could see the familial resemblance between mother and daughter, but it was Aiden's face that came to mind. He had been so dismissive of her today in her office,
Just one more example of his arrogance. How can his sister and mother be so nice and he be such a jerk? Caitlin, as vice president, took the podium, and her focus jerked back to what was being said. Caitlin called upon the committee chairs to report as well. Tori, taking the stand, said, "The music festival in the park is coming up, and we still need more baked goods to sell. The entire proceeds of the festival go to the American Legion and Auxiliary. Let me know if you can send some baked items in." Several other committees reported as well. Then Jillian announced, "At our next meeting, we'll be inducting several new members to our chapter of the American Legion Auxiliary. Last time, we met a couple of them, and tonight, I'd like to acknowledge Amelia Smith. I hope that you will make her welcome, as she and her daughter are new to Baytown. Leah, would you like to introduce yourself to the group? You can just stand and say a few words." Glad that Jillian had informed her earlier that she would be doing this, she stood and smiled nervously toward the large gathering. "Hello, I'm Amelia Smith, and I have an accounting business here in town, taking over for Mr. Redding. I'm pleased to be considered for membership in your organization. My husband was in the Marines, serving in Afghanistan. He..." Her mouth suddenly dry, she licked her lips, stunned that she had gone blank. The smiling faces of the women near her did not penetrate the cold that surrounded her heart.
"Your husband? You were talking about your husband,"
one of the elderly women sitting next to her prompted. With a mental shake, she blurted, "I'm a widow." As soon as the words were out, she could see the sympathy in everyone's eyes. Her gaze jumped to Jillian, still standing at the podium.
"That's fine, Leah, thank you," Jillian rushed, her face registering regret.
No, it's fine. My husband was killed in action 3 years ago. Anyway, thank you for allowing me to serve alongside you in the auxiliary."
Sitting quickly, she clasped her hands together, hoping to still the shaking. With a final prayer and the retirement of colors, Jillian read the auxiliary charge. "Till we meet again, let us remember that our obligation to our country can be fulfilled only by the faithful performance of all duties of citizenship. Let service to the community, state, and nation be ever a main objective of the American Legion Auxiliary and its members. Let us ever be watchful of our organization and ourselves, that nothing shall swerve us from the path of justice, freedom, loyalty, and democracy." After that, she pronounced, "If there is no further business to come before this meeting, the meeting is adjourned." She listened numbly to the end of the meeting, and then plastered a smile on her face to greet the many members who came to meet her. Their names and faces began to run together, but she desperately tried to keep them straight in her mind, some telling her about sons and husbands, brothers and fathers, all lost at war. Just as the walls were beginning to close in around her, she was left with a small group of women she knew, having met them around town or at the school or work. Caitlin wrapped her arm around her shoulders and said, "Come to Finn's with us." She wiped her brow with a shaky hand, looking at the friendly faces of Jillian, Tori, Madeline, and Belle. Jade, Emily's new school teacher, was also part of the gathering. Looking at the group of women she mentally titled Caitlin's crew, she felt torn between wanting to spend more time with them and feeling exhausted. Making the excuse of needing to get back to relieve her babysitter, she accepted Caitlin's hug and, with a wave goodbye, walked outside to her car. She lived in North Heron County, just outside of town in a small neighborhood along one of the bay waterways. Thankful for the short drive home, she nonetheless sat in the car for a moment, attempting to still the shaking of her hands. Thinking of her husband, Carl, always had that effect on her now. Forcing a calm facade onto her face before she went in to see Emily, she climbed from her vehicle. Opening the front door, she walked into her small living room, spying Emily in her pajamas, piled up on the sofa, watching a movie with one of the teenagers in the neighborhood who was babysitting.
"Don't you all look comfortable?" she called out, gaining Susie and Emily's attention.
Emily jumped up and ran to her, throwing her arms around her waist and giving her a hug. Bending to kiss the top of her head, she shot a look toward Susie.
"Everything go okay?"
Susie, a pretty blonde high school junior, stood and smiled.
"We were fine. Weren't we, Emily?"
Emily did not respond immediately, so Susie moved closer to her and repeated her words. Emily's face brightened with a huge smile.
"Yes, we had fun.
We watched movies and ate popcorn and played games.
Fabulous, she said, kissing her daughter's forehead. Let me pay Susie and you head on to bed. I'll be there in a few minutes.
Emily hugged Susie before running up the stairs. Taking out her wallet, she turned to Susie, holding out the money.
Thank you so much, she said with sincerity. It means a lot to have someone I can trust with her.
She was a doll. We had no problems at all, Miss Smith. Call me any time.
With that, Susie headed out, jogging across the street to her house. Watching until Susie was safely in her front door, she closed and locked hers. Refusing to give in to the thoughts threatening to drown her, she sucked in a deep breath and headed to the stairs. She found Emily, teeth brushed and already in bed with her doll tucked in next to her.
My, my, you are ready, aren't you?
Emily grinned the snaggle-toothed smile that always melted her heart. Sitting on the side of the bed, she tucked her in.
Since tonight was Mommy's night out, I've got a surprise for this weekend.
Seeing her daughter's wide eyes, she laughed.
There's a music festival in the park, and we're going to go.
Emily scrunched her nose and cocked her head to the side.
What kind of music?
She thought, her forehead crinkled.